Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm here tonight with Dave McKay, a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Very hot. Very hot. It's 106 degrees in Murphy's today.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but otherwise doing terrific.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, I know when it gets warm here, and then I'm thinking, wow, Murphy, that's warmer.
Yeah, people who've never experienced a climate like this really have no idea. I mean, it's hot. There's
yes.
No other way to describe it. It's hot.
It's hot, yes. And I read, I think somewhere on the website recently or in an email I received about, I think, swamp coolers being installed in hermitages or dormitories or something?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's what we've been working on all week. We've got, I think, six of them. They're evaporative coolers. They mix the air with water and cool the air off out that way. And they don't require a lot of electricity, which works for us because, as you know, we're off the grid and we could not even think about having an air conditioner. But these things kind of, they knock the worst of the hot off of it and give people, like in the places where people spend the most time, give people a way to be so it's just not horrible.
Oh, good. Wonderful. That's good news to hear.
More good news.
Yes. Yes. Dave, I understand that you and Sherry and the monks are often traveling, often not together with each other.
Mm-hmm. That's
doing
true.
Retreats here, and either you'll be at home and somebody else will be away or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about how you all communicate and keep up to date and current with each other.
Do you mean like on a technical level?
I mean sort of on every level.
On every level, okay.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, I'm sure you use telephones. And I guess for me, I'm curious more on a process level because I know there's a lot of good technology out there with phones and cell phones and all that.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, so we use the same technology everybody does,
yes.
Email mostly. But right now, Sherry and Jen are in Africa, as most people know.
Yeah.
And so, but we're still communicating regularly. Of course, it's challenging for them over there because the information technology over there, the infrastructure is not so good. So it's a real challenge for them to be able to get online. But, they're able to do it fairly frequently, and we can stay in contact that way. On a process level, it's kind of hard to explain, but I'll give it a shot.
Okay, great.
Most organizations, as I understand it, now I actually have never worked for a real organization, so this is kind of hearsay. What I understand is that the bottom line for most profit or even nonprofit probably organizations is that if you can produce what you've been hired to produce, that's great. Nobody is really all that concerned sort of about how you get there or how you produce what you're going to produce.
Yes.
That is not the case at all with us.
Uh-huh.
For us, the bottom line is how we do what we do.
I see.
And because of that, we have a lot of communication in our organization that most organizations don't have.
Yeah.
Because we all have to be, how to describe it. It's kind of like we all have to be sort of part supporting each other, part watching each other to make sure that the way we're doing what we're doing is in keeping with the practice of ending suffering that we want to try to offer to people in the world.
So what you're doing is part supporting and part watching each other and supporting each other so that you keep as your primary focus the process of ending suffering.
Exactly. Yeah, and a big component of this, which is not generally a component of organizations, is that, we're a religious organization. Specifically, we're a Zen Buddhist organization. And traditionally, and this is the case with us also, in a Buddhist organization, it's not a democracy.
Uh-huh.
It's more like a benevolent dictatorship.
Yes.
And the reason for that is that, the head of the organization, the Japanese word for it is the Roshi. The word we use for it is the guide.
Yeah.
The person who is sort of at the top of the heap, that person's job foremost is to make sure that everything that's done is done in keeping with practice. That we're always representing for ourselves and for others the opportunity to end suffering that we're all practicing. And so a lot of stuff, Sherry, of course, is that person. She's the guide for our practice. And, people would be amazed, I think, at the level of detail that she's interested in what we're doing, for the reason that we're talking about, because it's all process in a way. You know, it all, the way we do everything down to, you know, the favorite example she likes to use is how I put the stamp on the envelope.
Yeah.
You know, if I put the stamp on crooked, what that says to people is the monk who did that was not here, was not present.
Uh-huh.
And so we really want to be present. We want to be able to put the stamp on the envelope straight and exactly where it needs to be, because that says this person was present, and that's what we want to represent to the world.
Uh-huh.
And so she's keeping tabs on everything that we're doing pretty much on that level.
Yes.
And then whenever it feels like something is not happening that's in keeping with who we are trying to be for ourselves and for other people, then she does the process that we kind of jokingly refer to as pointing out obvious unpleasantness. And she just says, "Hey, gang, this isn't it. This is not what we're going for."
Uh-huh.
And kind of steers us so that we can all. She helps us, you might say, so that we all can be who we want to be as much of the time as we can.
Yes, yes. So it's her, as if I'm understanding you correctly, it's her responsibility to keep in mind at all times the practice of ending suffering and seeing at a very high level of detail how everything we do is keeping with that or not keeping with that.
Yeah, that's really true. Now, we might say that it's everyone's responsibility to keep that in mind,
yes,
which is true. But what makes a person the guide is that they have a great ability, of course, to be present and to understand the difference between, you know, the thing we talk about as conditioned mind, the difference between that and ego mind.
Yes.
You know, the more that one understands the difference between those two things, the more that one's actions and words represent practice, you know, represent clarity.
Uh-huh.
And also the more that someone can communicate in a way that's effective.
Yes, yes. So the more a person can distinguish between being here and present versus coming from conditioned mind, egocentric karmic conditioning, and the better they can understand that, the better they're able to communicate that to other people.
Yeah, and also the better that they're able to just communicate between people.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's interesting. The topic of communication is a gigantic topic.
Yes.
And for us, it's a huge topic. You know, I never would have guessed when I kind of signed on to this life that I'm leading here that a big piece of what we'd be working on all the time is communication. I just never thought that that would be a piece of the equation.
Yeah.
But it is, because, you know, to be able to really communicate in a way that leads to, you know, clarity, understanding, that leads away from conflict and hard feelings and misunderstandings, requires a great deal of skill, and it requires also a great deal of being present. And you know, you can really tell where you are by in any given moment by how well you're communicating, because it takes a really clear mind to communicate clearly.
Uh-huh. Takes a really clear mind to communicate clearly. Yes. And in my experience with it, in communicating with the monastery and within the practice, I feel very much, a couple things about it. One is that I feel very much included. I feel very heard, that my ideas are listened to.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I experience is that when it's pointed out to me that perhaps something I'm doing is not skillful or present, that the way that's done is really kind.
Yeah, that's my experience too. Otherwise, you know, if it weren't that way, nobody would do it. It would be unbearably horrible.
Yes.
You know, but the fact that, you know, and again, that's what the position of a guide is all about. And, you know, the guide is not necessarily one person, you know, although we use that word to refer to one person.
Yeah.
You know, we all have the guide within us. You know, we might say the guide is for each of us, our capacity to be present and live in conscious, compassionate awareness. And
yes.
So, you know, another part of the guide's role is to make sure, it's really another way of saying the same thing that we've been saying, is to make sure that what happens in between people, who in this case she's kind of supervising and guiding, that it all happens in a way that's kind and compassionate. You know, because that too has to represent who we are. You know, what we're trying to learn to do, we're trying to learn how to not just to be present, but how to be present in compassion with ourselves and with other people. And so, you know, even kind of those behind-the-scenes, interpersonal communications that happen, those also we're practicing all the time to represent us, even though, you know, it might be nobody ever would really know that, you know, that I said this thing or that I did this thing. But,
right.
You know, we're all working towards that.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're saying is that what we're going for is that kind and compassionate communication pretty much all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's sort of in a more public arena, the way we are here on open air, and for everything that happens behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's really true. And not that so that we can avoid being judged. You know, not so that we can avoid doing it wrong. Because even though, I mean, nobody, it's difficult to live from this place, from this the understanding I'm about to say, but we can understand that we, no matter what happens, we're not in this environment, we're not going to be judged for it, because that's not what we do. You know, that's not kind and compassionate.
Yeah.
You know, but we're attempting to communicate as clearly as we can, because and as compassionately as we can, because that requires a great deal of being present.
Yeah.
And whenever that happens, and this is kind of a part, I think, of the experience you're talking about, you know, whenever that happens, whenever it happens that we don't meet that hope that we have to communicate in that way.
Yes.
And it gets reflected to us either by the guide or by, you know, just the reaction of the other person.
Yes.
We realize that we weren't present in the way
yes.
that we are really want to be. And so it becomes really, really helpful. Everything
yes.
becomes sort of like a laboratory in which we get to see whether we're present or whether we're, you know, kind of identified in some way in conditioned mind.
Yes. 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 It's really fascinating. Yeah. So everything can become a mirror for us.
Yeah. It really does. It all comes down to, you know, to showing us whether or not we're present.
Yes. Dave, I've really enjoyed this exploration.
As have I.
Thanks for joining me today.
Okay, thanks a lot. Have a great show.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Good evening and welcome to Open Air. Tonight I'm joined by Melinda Guyal, monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Melinda.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's quite lovely to be here.
Great. Great to have you on the air. Melinda, we have a stack of callers here.
Oh, that's wonderful. Why don't we get started?
Okay, great. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm calling from Seattle.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Melinda. I don't have an actual issue today. I went to the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat at the end of February, and I have a rotating day off at my job, so I finally figured out, well, you know what I could do is every 6 weeks when I have a Tuesday off, I can call in, because usually I'm not available to listen to it live.
Ah, yeah. So here you are.
So here I am, just calling in, and I'd just like to share a little bit about a few things that have been going on since then. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, the retreat was fantastic, and of course I got home and there was a bit of a relapse, as it were. but
conditioning may have come along and
it did.
Trying to get you back into its clutches.
It did, and my wife is also does the practice, and we had a bit of a spat like the first day I was back, and then we realized we were both projecting wildly on each other. And so we ironed that out, and we've both been meditating pretty steadily. And it's just been the archives, for one, have been just a huge boon. I've been able to listen to those while I'm at work three or four at a time a day, and then just go through and go through again.
Oh, that's a nice way to practice, isn't it?
It is. It keeps my mind off other stuff, and I just listen to all these and people call in, and plus I kind of get to know them too, the people who call frequently.
Yes.
You
can kind of follow their process.
Exactly. And you can follow along and see that follow the process and the progress.
Yeah.
And that's also encouraging.
And usually we find that whatever somebody else is doing, we have some form of it too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but what's really I get a kick out of is how many shows there'll be where someone calls up, then the second person calls up and says, well, my issue is a lot like the previous call. And the third who says, oh, my thing is a lot like the previous two, and it happens show after show after show.
Yeah, yeah, we really are quite connected.
Uh-huh. And this summer, the last couple summers, we have two kids, two girls, 6 and 9, and the six-year-old, the younger one, can be a bit of a handful, and this summer is going so much more smoothly because we read the book, the Time Off for Parents book that you and Sherry did.
Uh-huh.
That was very helpful. And
oh, good.
And it's just fascinating to see how much of the problems, in quotes, that we've had have, frankly, been mostly our own doing, and just the way we deal with whatever the kids are doing.
Yeah, how conditioning begets conditioning.
Yes, the kids do whatever, and then we're off into a feeling that means, I don't want you to do that, please stop. And so just being able to be more mindful and just, take a breath and pay attention, and we're able to, more often than not, deal with them a lot better.
Well, and how wonderful for the kids as well as for you all.
Yes.
To be able to have practice come in and have that kind of impact on your relationship with one another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, too, when I listened to the archives, listening to Michael talk about his kids being born, and my usual, and I still have this response, is I go into, oh, if I'd only had the practice when they were born, then they wouldn't be so screwed up kind of thing. I still tend to go, like I just listened the other day to, I just started over the archives and I heard him talking about his first child being born. And so I immediately went off into that scenario, but I was able to catch it. And so.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, if it's anything less helpful than reviews, I'm not sure what it is.
Then what? Reviews?
Then reviews. You know, going over something that was then and it's done, and, you're here now and you're being with your kids in the best way you can be now, and, but conditioning wants to say, yeah, but what if?
Uh-huh.
And well, just kind of run you over the coals with that one.
Yes, and that's another thing that jumped out was my wife and I both said, well, if... In the past, we have said, well, if only we could start over, with what we know now. But then one of us said, well, we can. We'll just start over now and start parenting the way we would want to have parented 9 years ago.
Yes, yeah. There's a wonderful book title. I think this is the title. Always We Begin Again.
Uh-huh.
And there it is. You're just starting in each moment.
Mm-hmm. Is that a Sherry book or some other book?
No, if I'm remembering the title right, it's a book by a Benedictine monk.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give that book. Okay.
But that sounds like the place that you and your wife get to is, yeah, hey, okay, we're starting now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's just, it's helpful. And,
there's no need to have regrets, ever.
it's a difficult concept to grasp, but in some ways, but on the other hand, I experientially, I can see that it is so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It
really only serves conditioning. Doesn't do diddly squat for us.
That's right. And it was great to hear Dave on the thing previous to you too, because in fact, I remember when I was. After the retreat, being mired and back in my conditioning for a while, listening to the archives, and he was popped up to be the guest talking about sustainability. It's like 3 years ago or something, and just hearing his voice then made it all seem real, because I was questioning everything, like what just happened? I don't know, blah 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 blah. And then hearing him talk was just like, oh.
Yeah, that's such a wonderful thing to point out. I'm not sure I'd heard anybody say that before, but to have the voices of people who have been involved in facilitation or been here at the monastery as a real, it sounds like you're saying, a real sort of trigger for bringing yourself back to where you were when you were hearing that voice the last time.
Yes, it was just because I was really just questioning it all. I was convinced I couldn't ever return to center. I was starting to question, whatever happened and everything about it, and then just hearing it talk to someone. In fact, I keep that show on my iPod. I've listened to other ones and delete them, but I keep that one on there, and I can just cruise
That's
over to
That's such
it.
A great idea.
The iPod's been great.
Uh-huh.
Listening to those shows. I really appreciate all the work that goes into keeping those available.
Well, and it's I really appreciate how much you and other people use those to really support your practice.
Well, good, thanks. Yeah, there's not a sitting group in Seattle. Maybe there will be someday. I know that talking to people about the practice is, we had some friends over for dinner and they were interested in what it was all about, and we both tried and failed miserably to expound on any of it with any kind of coherency. But they were interested, so I thought I'd say something, but it was just pointless.
Yeah, it's a really hard thing to do. What we always encourage folks to do is, hand people the website and maybe give them a copy of There Is Nothing Wrong With You and
right.
sort of let them make those discoveries for themselves without your having to get, taken in by conditioning in the process.
Mm-hmm. We just loaned out a stack of books today, actually, to somebody.
Yeah.
So, I know there's other callers, and I'm going to move on. I just wanted to call up and say thank you for everything, and I will be calling back every 6 weeks when I have
every 6 weeks? That's great, Chris. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Melinda. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air. Melinda, I'm reminded again and yet again what a privilege it is to be involved with the practice and the radio show.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. Extraordinary.
Yeah.
Ready for another caller?
Sure.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Kat from San Francisco.
Hi, Kat.
Hi, Melinda. How are you?
Doing very well. And yourself?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
It's actually, listening to Dave talk about communication and just what the other caller said, it was perfect because the issue I'm calling about is kind of really related to communication and being present and how to communicate.
Mm.
But so what's been coming up for me is I'm very new to the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm recently in a new relationship, so there's a lot of stuff coming up for me.
Lots of practice opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that in reading, I've been reading Be the Person You Want to Find, and in reading that, thinking a lot about process versus content, I'm finding that there's a process that is happening consistently in this relationship, and I'm really struggling with how to get to center and really understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And what is happening is that I'm finding in this relationship that my partner will either say something to me, that I perceive as negative, make a comment about something about my personality, or something will happen that I'll feel hurt by. And so
mm-hmm.
then what happens is the identity of the child immediately kicks in for me, taking that hurt in and feeling a bit rejected, and then also a little bit angry and frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I find that this other identity takes over who's like, who I was thinking of the communicator of, well, I have to let him know that he's hurt me and he
uh-huh.
needs to understand how he's hurt me.
Yeah.
And so I want to bring up this issue with him and I want to engage, and he doesn't want to engage with me because he doesn't see it as an issue. And so then immediately my identity feels hugely threatened because I find my belief system of, well, couples talk about things and we're supposed to talk about this, and it's about communicating with each other, and he needs to know how I feel and what I think all the time, that
mm-hmm.
identity takes over, and that it's not even when he hurts me, it's maybe I'm just thinking something about our relationship and I'll want to bring it up, and immediately he will be like, well, you're being very serious and I don't want to be serious, and then that identity kicks back in, but this is what couples are supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
And so I keep feeling threatened, and whether he's hurt me or he doesn't want to talk about it, I'm finding it really challenging to return to center because all I can think in my head is, well, I'm not having a need met by him. and right. how to get to that point of going, well, how do I meet my own need?
Yes.
That identity is going, no, no, no. He needs to meet this need, and he needs to understand that this is important, and that's what a relationship is about.
Yeah. Yeah, relationships are really all about sort of, in a way, we get to, they're all about having needs we expect the other person to meet and then being disappointed because they don't meet them.
Yes.
You know how that kind of, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're really on to a good practice track in terms of how can you take care of yourself as this process goes on of the parts of you who are disappointed because he doesn't have the same guidebook about couples communication that you have.
Yes, yes. And
his
then,
book sounds really different as often happens in male-female relationships.
Yeah, and one of the things that, a fear that comes up around that is, well, if he can't do that, then is this the person I want to be with, and maybe I'm making the wrong decision, and how can I be with somebody like this who doesn't mm-hmm. think the same way I do or want to feel that it's important to engage in, and then I just snowball into a whole other path. And so it's
yeah.
just really, really struggling with finding center and how, and also I guess a larger question for me is, and this is probably identity and conditioning saying, well, you know, how am I supposed to be with someone who isn't, when I come into the situation and may say, well, let's figure out how we can resolve this together. He says, well, I don't think there's anything to resolve. And you go, oh, but I'm trying to, my identity going, but I'm trying to be nice and I'm trying to be helpful and I'm trying to be a mediator. And he's not even willing to meet me halfway. And then it all starts again.
Yeah, yeah. And you're left feeling really frustrated and
yeah.
wondering if this is the right relationship for you because it really seems to you as though whenever you want to sit down and talk about something so you can better understand it, that's really not what he's interested in doing.
Yes, yes.
Mhm. Mhm. So, Kat, where does that leave you?
Well, you know, last night, this you know, the last situation happened last evening, and I found that I kind of came to bed in tears and had this panic attack almost, which I haven't had in years, and that was kind of a big red flag for me to go, whoa, there's something else going on here, and I'm really not meeting my needs myself and really feeling a lot of anxiety and dread because I'm putting all of these expectations on him to meet these needs, and when he's not doing it, I'm having anxiety about whether this is something I want to be in, so that's
mm-hmm.
where I don't know. I that's where I'm struggling. How do I meet those needs for myself and not bring that expectation to him? You know, is it just committing to the practice and returning to center? Because that's what I'm finding is like I'm so stuck in that identity sometimes that I can't get to the center. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this might be a place for a little commercial announcement in terms of the There Is Nothing Wrong With You workshop.
Yes.
Have you done it yet?
No, I have not.
Because that might be something that you really want to get on your schedule.
Okay.
That the work of the retreat is really developing the tools to help us answer exactly the kinds of, address exactly the kinds of issues that you're talking about. How do I turn toward myself and take care of myself and still be in relationship?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right.
Because I'm really hearing that you've really sort of gotten it, that ultimately it's going to be you understanding you and
yeah.
really caring for you in a way that's supportive and, well, in a way that's really supportive.
Yeah.
And just how to do that when, and this happens to all of us, when we get so stuck in an identity that it feels like there's just nowhere to go.
Yeah. Can I ask, before I'm able to attend the retreat,
mm-hmm.
is there any... what tools, I mean, is it just focusing on breath and returning to center? Are there any other tools that I can, in this time, I can focus on as this process keeps coming up for me?
Well, I would keep reading the books.
Okay.
And because they're going to be tools that all of the tools are described, I think, in each of the books, the There Is Nothing Wrong With You book in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a group to sit with, you know, there's I think you said you're in San Francisco?
Yes.
There's a sitting group that's associated with this practice. You might want to check them out, and because you can talk about exactly the kinds of things you and I are talking about at your sitting group.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. All right. Well, thank
and,
you so
know,
much.
Check the, schedule on the website, and because we have more and more practice opportunities, and, you know, availing yourself of as many of them as you can is a really, you know, that's a really giant step in that caring for yourself that you're learning how to do.
Yes, yes. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for calling in, Kat.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Kat. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have special guests, Melinda Dahl, the monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Melinda, we're going to take a quick break here, and we will be right back.
All righty.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful, simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air. Melinda, we have two more callers in the queue here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, this is Chris from Copenhagen, Denmark.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Melinda.
Calling very early in the morning, your time.
Yeah, it's like 2:15 or 2:30, something like that. Yeah. So, but what I'm calling about is that I feel like my practice is growing and growing. I'm sort of I'm involved in quite a lot of the practice opportunities offered by Living Compassionately. For example, the reflective Listening Buddies program, for example, turns out to be something way beyond my wildest dreams in terms of how it supports my practice and sort of the one thing as well and so on and so forth.
Oh,
and
good. So you're really taking advantage of many of the practice opportunities and finding that it's helping.
Yeah. Yeah, really am. I guess some of these things, particularly the Reflective Listening Buddies program, it was kind of something that I didn't know about, didn't know whether, you know, what it, you know, how it would support my practice. I just sort of saw an opportunity and took it.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I find that it has quite an amazing effect on my week. It's a weekly call, right?
Ah.
And it's really hard for me to stay in conditioning, actually, with that weekly call to somebody who's really listening.
So, if you don't mind, I'll take just a second to describe the program in case there's anybody listening who doesn't know about it. That you sign up, and each week, as you say, you arrange a time with another person to do your reflective listening call, and it's got it's very much in the privileged environment, so it's not a social call. And then you talk for 15 minutes about whatever's going on for you. And the other person just reflects what you're saying. And then at the end of that 15 minutes, they talk about whatever's going on for them, and you just reflect. So it's a real chance to speak and be heard and to be very present for another person who's also doing the practice.
Yeah, my own experience actually is that it's one of those deceptively simple things. And it's pretty hard. I find afterwards it has a kind of knock-on effect that it's hard for me afterwards not to listen to other people.
Ah.
I kind of shut them out. It has this sort of, it rubs off, if you know what I mean. That's
so you really find yourself being present in conversations other than the formal reflective listening.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Because I catch myself not listening.
Yes.
I sort of become aware of that. Because I sort of experienced myself listening.
Yes, and now, and so you're seeing the difference. That's lovely. Yeah.
That's exactly right. But what I'm seeing is, I'm looking at how I can sort of support my practice. And sitting here in Copenhagen, and what's amazing is that my wife Caroline is also into this practice.
Mm-hmm.
And, and how we support each other is wonderful. But what I'm seeing
sangha.
Yes. Well, that's household sangha, you might call it.
Yes.
what I'm seeing is that a kind of local sangha would really support my practice. And I've kind of seen on the website, in fact, it's come up already with a couple of callers earlier in this program, that there are local sitting groups. And so on. So my question is, you know, how does that work, and how do they form, and you know, how does the whole thing work with sitting groups?
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, that is a question that I would sort of deflect and refer you to the folks over at the registration office, and suggest that you email with questions about that you're interested in starting a sitting group and would like to know more about it.
Okay.
Because that's an arena that if I venture into it, I'm in danger of leading you astray. So I think I'd rather send you in a direction that I know you won't be led astray.
Okay. So that's just the general, because there may be other people listening, I guess, to the show who are also sitting in their, you know, alone in their practice in the local area, thinking maybe there are other local people. So is that just the general email, or do I find that on the website somewhere?
Well, the website has reference to the specific sitting groups. I don't know that it actually says this is the way to begin a sitting group. So I do think that if other folks are listening who are thinking, wow, you know, maybe there's a way to have a sitting group here, again, to email the registration office or information at Living Compassion with the questions about that.
Okay. Great. Well, I do that then.
Great.
Great. Thank you very much, Melinda, and thank you, Michael.
Well, thank you, Chris, for staying up so late or getting up so early, and it was good to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Chris. You're listening to Open Air. Melinda, I'm always so excited when people call internationally.
Oh, it seems so heroic.
Yeah,
and at the same time, it's really it's so inspiring because it seems to be kind of a measure of the importance of practice.
Yeah.
When we're, you know, pretty much willing to do anything that helps support it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
As Chris was talking, I was imagining, you know, a map of the Earth, and there's Copenhagen, Denmark, and there's like a little light flashing or pulsing there, you know, a little energy.
I love it. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Always very exciting.
Yep.
And
and also that Reflective Listening Buddies is an international force.
Yes, it is an international force, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for me, what I love about Reflective Listening Buddies, like the radio show, is you can't snooze through it. You have to be there.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, you can't snooze through it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, those practice opportunities that don't allow us to snooze are absolutely the best, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yep.
Yes, they are. And I also wanted to mention, relative to Chris's conversation, that in an earlier show, probably several weeks or a month or so ago, Dave was talking about local sitting groups.
Ah, so it's archived somewhere.
It's
there might be more information in that?
Yes. And it's in the good news update section, so right at the beginning there.
Very fine. So I hope Chris is still listening, and anybody else who's thinking along those lines.
Yes.
See if you can find that good news item that talks about sitting groups.
Yes, definitely. Wendell, let me give out the phone number here.
Okay.
Phone number is toll-free in North America, 888-4-SANGHA. And if you spell that out into numbers, you get 888-472-6442. We probably have time here for some more callers, so if you'd like to call in, we'd love to talk with you today. And Melinda, I have one more caller here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, this is Beth.
Hi, Beth.
Good evening, Melinda. I'm thrilled that you're doing the show tonight.
Uh-huh. Well, how's it going?
I've been looking at service.
Okay.
Yeah, and kind of control issues.
So you've been looking at service and at control issues.
Yeah, and it's like I've become aware of the fact that I tend to be controlling.
Uh-huh. Unlike all the rest of us. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty unique in this.
Uh-huh.
And I had an event that I've been doing for 20 years this last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of noticing, and I was actually kicked out before, but just kind of noticing the gifts of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, going from a place of service as opposed to a place of wanting anything.
Ah, okay. So whatever this event is, you're looking at going as service rather than going and hoping to get something.
Right. My job is to clean the bathrooms.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's not glorious.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a glorious kind of thing.
Heroic, so, perhaps.
Yeah, but when I had the glorious job, I was completely miserable.
Uh-huh.
To the point that I was kicked out.
The job that somehow gets defined as glorious.
Right.
As opposed
to
cleaning the bathrooms, which does not get defined as glorious.
Oh, no.
No,
nobody
okay.
Else wanted to do it.
Hmm?
Nobody else wanted to do it.
Nobody
but
else
finding,
wanted to do it. Therefore,
yeah.
It's glorious. Yeah.
Right. So. I mean, so, and kind of finding that, you know, it's like just the bliss that's available.
Say more.
Well, there's like this place of I'm not out to get anything or do anything or solve anything or, you know, be with anybody or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm just there to make sure the bathrooms are getting cleaned. And,
yeah, that's the job that you were either
to
do or you volunteered to do, and so that's what you're focusing on.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's kind of, and interactions with people, just kind of reminding myself it's not personal. You know, and kind of like in stepping out of the way, and it's just like, you know, the fruits of the spirit
mm-hmm.
are the same as the fruits of the practice. If I'm practicing, then, you know, there's really not a problem.
If you're, and it's that I'm hearing that as if you're present.
Yeah, see, I have no idea if I am or not.
Uh-huh. But you're going ahead and doing the job, and not taking anything personally about doing this particular job, just doing the best bathroom cleaning you can do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The element that I've been working with for the last couple of months since I saw Sherry in April was learning to take care of myself.
Uh-huh.
And kind of reparenting myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard you say that to an earlier caller, and it's like, you know, the finding that that, you know, not taking it personal also extends to me.
To Say that again. There's some wind noise or something.
Yeah, Pittsburgh, there's a storm brewing.
Uh-huh.
I was listening to the radio show, looking out the windows at these huge clouds.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
We do some of that here if you have any way to ship it to
us. Oh, we'd love to ship it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's gone the other way. Yeah, but... yeah. the kind of finding, you know, it's like I was in a situation where I was kind of required to be present.
Uh-huh.
And to kind of be there. And mm-hmm. it's kind of like it's like retreat where, you know, I kind of left my quote-unquote real life behind. It
uh-huh.
was just there.
You left, and it sounds, Beth, like you kind of left the stories behind.
I didn't think about Pittsburgh once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and then finding, you know, like the reentry back into Pittsburgh, also a delight.
Uh-huh.
Now that I'm here, my garden is just, like, spectacular. You know, there's some real delights here, too.
So you went away to do this event, and sounds like we're able to stay pretty present for at least part of it, an important part of it. And then you came back to Pittsburgh and sort of stayed with that sense of being present.
Yeah, I mean, I can still feel the barbs. There's some pretty sharp barbs. But even, because I've got some baobabs in my life in Pittsburgh that need attending, and I don't want to attend them.
Uh-huh. Somebody doesn't want to attend them.
Oh, strongly.
Which is a good way to stay in suffering, isn't it?
It works again and yet again.
Yeah.
And I fall for it again and yet again.
Yep. Yep. When we just go out and do them and get them done, there's no suffering.
And it's actually quite enjoyable sometimes.
Yeah.
It's clean.
Yep. Yeah, unlike the conversation we usually get that, oh, it's going to be awful and blah, 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 blah. We do it, and it wasn't so bad after all.
Which is kind of what, you know, Sherry talked about in April, just like learning to take care of myself in those spaces.
Yes.
So that, you know, it's not a three-year-old trying to do these jobs, because...
Yeah, letting the three-year-old be there if she wants to be, but not having her be in control.
Yeah, because I'll... She'll, she,
it won't be pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, so the moment-by-momentness of it, because right now it's like, even just like bringing up the issue of the baobabs, I can feel like the tightening,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of the smallness.
Yes. Yeah. Moving in kind of to a smallness, a contraction.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but the rummage sale is coming up in 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So this is a fundraising rummage sale?
It's a fundraising rummage sale,
mm-hmm.
and it's a two-day event, and for me, it's my place of service. And it's been my practice for the last couple of years, 2 years now,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to kind of like put myself fully into a project that has nothing to do with me.
Yes. Yeah. And keep on sort of with the intention that it doesn't have anything to do with me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, which is kind of crazy because, you know, who wants to put that kind of work into something you're not going to get anything out of?
Now, do you really believe you're not going to get anything out of it?
Oh, no. I get my sanity out of it. Insanity being the wrong word. I get happiness.
Yes. Yeah. So crazy to put something in, all that energy into something you're not going to get anything out of is a quotation from conditioning, I assume.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. There's like this temptation to go off into the chaos. But there's also kind of a real strong desire just to stay quiet.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And how about combining those? Doing the rummage sale and staying quiet.
Ha.
Could be a little workshop.
Hmm. I'll look at that.
Hmm?
Well, look at that. I'm intensely grateful to the work you've done with over the years with me personally, but also with just with your teachings. Thank you.
Well, practice is really something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just
And good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'll call in after the rummage sale, huh? And tell us
how
it goes.
I'll call in after the rummage sale. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And tell us how quiet you were.
I will find that. I will use that. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Melinda.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in, Beth. Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air. Today we have a special guest, Melinda Guyals, a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California. I'm so excited to have her with us today.
Wow, I really enjoy doing this. It's so wonderful having the opportunity to talk to people from all corners of the earth about all different kinds of practice stuff.
Yes, yes. Privilege is the word that just comes up over and over again for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let me give out the phone number one more time. We have
okay.
One caller waiting. Phone number is 888-472-6442. We have about 15 minutes left today, plenty of time to talk to people. So if you've been thinking about calling in, now is the time.
Do it, do it.
Do it, do it. Melinda, I'm going to take a quick break for us here, and we'll be
okay.
Back in just a minute.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.watchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Melinda, we have another call here.
Okay.
Next call, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Melinda. It's Rebecca from Texas.
Well, hi, Rebecca from Texas.
How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Staying remarkably cool at the moment.
Oh, yeah, well. And hi, Michael, to you, too.
Hello.
Hi.
I said hi to Michael, too. So, I'm glad that there was an opportunity to call in and talk a little bit, because I have just been looking at tons of things, but particularly mm-hmm. what seems to be yanking my chain right now is around these changes that have come up in my life around work and creativity and my normal pattern and my normal daily pace has been severely interrupted and disrupted lately, and so I find myself with all this time and I just don't know what to do with myself.
That's such a wonderful, you know, when you look at it, I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
Consider who the person who's the I in that sentence and who the self is that she needs to do something with.
Oh, gosh, boy, you really touched it there, because it's, you know, there are some really distinct places to be with all this, because sometimes it does feel like that. It feels like there is this treadmill that the rest of the world is on, and my karma is to feel very left behind, that I'm not in the hustle and bustle like I project everyone else is.
Uh-huh.
And then there's all kinds of meaning attached to that, you know.
What it means about you, that all those people are out there on those treadmills.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Of course,
you're
here
trying to figure out what to do with yourself.
Yeah, and to that part, it doesn't look like a treadmill. It looks like, you know, happening. They're making things happen, mm-hmm. and they're really living. But then on the other hand, sometimes it can feel like this real expansive place of possibility.
Mhm.
You know, and just watching myself go back and forth between those two places has just been a real workshop in itself, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds, and you're probably looking at it this way, it sounds like going back and forth between two identities that are really quite distinctly different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At least two, you know.
Yeah. 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 One who yearns to be somehow in what she sees as the hustle and bustle that people are out there making things happen,
mm-hmm.
on the one side, and then this feeling of just great expansion.
Yeah. And I'll tell you where it really becomes suffering is when money comes into it, because, mm-hmm. you know, without the hustle and bustle, I don't have the income that I used to have. And so it's just this real Achilles heel for me for conditioning to bring in these threats of being impoverished and my family's going to suffer and all of that kind of stuff.
Egg lady out on the street with the shopping cart.
Uh-huh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and money is always just so really, really, really real, isn't it?
It feels that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know something that's fun, Rebecca, I don't know if you've heard this approach suggested, but it's to go ahead and sort of have a little guided imagery for yourself going into the place that conditioning wants to tell you you're going to go,
mm-hmm.
when you're out of money.
Mm-hmm. So basically just run with it and not resist it.
Run with it, don't resist it, and see if it turns out to be as bad as conditioning threatens.
Folks yeah.
sometimes get to things like, well, you know, it might be kind of interesting to hitchhike across the country and take a begging bowl. And no, I'm just making that up. But,
yeah, yeah.
But go beyond the threat that can be so disconcerting.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
the threat of you're going to be broke and what's
yeah.
your family going to do?
Well, you know, that's
no?
funny because when you said, I see what you mean, because when you said that about the, you know, being the bag lady under the bridge or whatever, what came up was, no, it's even worse. You're going to have to live with your family. You know, you have to go back and live with your sister, you know, or whatever. And
the real threat.
Huh?
The real threat.
Yeah, the real threat. And so to follow that out, you know, down the line is kind of what you're suggesting. And, you know, I really have only done that in the smallest little bits. It's mostly really been me kind of running from and resisting those threats, not really going with it. And I
exactly. And that's just such a classic way that conditioning keeps us in dread.
Mm-hmm.
It makes this threat, drops it there, and we're left just living with the threat without, you know, okay, well, what would it be like to live with my sister?
Mm-hmm.
Would that be so bad?
Mm-hmm.
What else might be, you know, might potentially happen if I was as broke as conditioning tells me I'm going to be?
Yeah, yeah. It is. It's just that... Well, things I've heard at the monastery a lot when people say, well, is that so? You know, that's just
yeah.
the life-saving question there.
Yeah.
But I tell you, when it gets me, it feels like paralysis.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, it's speaking to someone. It sounds like that paralysis is probably a part who's got, you know, all kinds of fears
mm-hmm.
about what's going to happen to her.
Yeah, it really, yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It sure is.
Do a lot of care and comfort and maybe reflective listening for that one.
Yeah, yeah. That fear completely dries up any creativity,
mm.
any energy, anything that might actually, you know, be the money generator, the support.
Producing income, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It's like blackmail. You know, because it'll come in and with this great threat, and we just go with the threat rather than turning to it and saying, you know, is that so, as you say? Or
yeah.
What if it does happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and also what I've been noticing is, because it really has been kind of like a roller coaster, because there's also been these tremendous episodes of support and enthusiasm where it just feels like life is giving me a kiss, you know, to say, yes, you're going in the right direction, you know.
I like that. Life is giving me a kiss. Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't it? Do you know that feeling,
yeah.
Don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that the universe is really 100% behind everything you're doing.
Yeah.
Except
and,
conditioning comes in and says, yeah, but what about?
Yeah, and you know what else conditioning does is it tries to cling to that experience of the universe supporting it, too.
Ah.
So there are two ways that I can slip out, at least two, but two that I'm seeing right now, I can slip out of that place of well-being and being supported by the universe, and that is to, you know, have a big old fear introduced, but also to try to hang on to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gosh, that's what I'm just seeing.
Yeah, and what I was seeing as you were saying that is to develop an agenda around it rather than just go along for the ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get
yeah.
some expectations going, and then something happens, and oh no, where's my universal support? It's not working. It's not working.
Yeah, yeah, because you know, and it just takes a split moment to. Of not paying, you know, of kind of going to sleep to go into that place.
Right, right. You know, and then there's that the opportunity of, hey, I'm here. It's okay.
Yeah.
No matter what.
No matter what. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Many opportunities for that these days in your life. In all of us.
Well, and just learning how.
Curvy. Schedule and yeah.
Well, and the downtime, you know, learning how to manage a lot of time, or to just accept that I have a lot of time with not a fast pace, is just as hard as it was to manage a lot of stress. I'm finding.
Well, and I wonder if when it was really hustle bustle all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether one of the issues was I never have enough time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That was one thing conditioning tried to get a grip on and manage and make it work. And you know that's kind of the classic American. Oh, I'm so stressed.
Yeah.
But what I'm finding is it's equally a place of suffering to be on the other end of the spectrum.
If conditioning's got it, it doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is. I can suffer with either, which makes me, of course, wonder if maybe if I had all the money in the world, I would equally be suffering if conditioning had that.
Well, you know, it may just, you might just get an opportunity, who knows?
Well, I wouldn't mind that opportunity,
we do get information that a lot of folks who have a lot of money aren't that free of suffering.
Yeah, of course it's not a, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. This is, you know, it's just so good to put it out there and to get the support. So I'm really grateful to you for doing this. And Michael.
Well, I'm glad you called in, Rebecca. Thank you, because I'm sure there are a lot of folks who can relate to what we've been talking about.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Y'all have a great evening.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the distinct pleasure of having Melinda Guyal, a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, here with us on Open Air.
And I get to have the pleasure of being here.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Melinda, I could relate almost word for word for what Rebecca was sharing.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So funny.
Yeah. What can I do with myself, and what am I going to do when I'm completely broke? And
yeah.
Yeah.
And I was also relating to, you know, I'm so busy, I'm so stressed, and, you know, for me personally, you know, two young kids, and now I have no time, and where's all the money going, and if I only had some time and some money, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
If only.
Say that again?
If only.
If only. And it's exactly true. I do get some time, and then I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah. Well, and I just saw just sort of in neon somehow when you said that if only that, you know, if we took care of ourselves in the if onlys,
yes.
if we were there with ourselves no matter what and really knew it,
yes.
then we wouldn't have to put our energy into the if onlys.
Yes. Yes. If we're only there for ourselves when that if only comes up.
Yes.
We don't have
well put, Michael.
We don't have to follow that story.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think those are wise words.
Well, and that if only being so much the parallel universe. You
yes.
know, so here I am, and there's this to do, and there's this amount of time. Okay. But if only there was more time. Well, there isn't. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Great practice.
Great practice. Great practice. And I always love the quote about time. And I know you've heard some variation on these quotes is, well, here's a moment, and, well, here's another moment, and
mm-hmm.
time is just coming at me all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time. So how can I believe this story that there's no time?
Well, and that, as you said that, I have all the time in the world.
Yes.
It's just, you know, how am I going to choose to be with it?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. What fun.
Yes, what fun. Melinda, we're at the top of the hour here.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's been a grand hour. Thank you, Michael, very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. I enjoyed it immensely.
And I'll be looking forward to hearing the show next week.
Okay, great. Thank you, Melinda.
Mm-hmm. Good night, Michael.
Good night.